As Bart mentioned, tonight we begin a new book, a new series of studies. Tonight we are going to do an introduction of the book of Deuteronomy. I wanted to read this short quote here from Eugene Merrill in his commentary on the book of Deuteronomy. In this section, he is addressing the question of the purpose of the writings of the Pentateuch. He says, first, it was important that the people understand who they were, where they originated, and what their God intended for them in the years to come. Genesis enabled them to trace their roots back to the patriarchs and to the patriarchal covenant that promised a people and a land. Exodus rehearsed the story of the growth of that people, their redemption from cruel and despotic bondage, and their covenant affiliation with the Lord, who called and equipped them to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. That book, together with Leviticus, outlined the means by which the nation might have access to a holy God and how it must function as a holy people in fulfilling the covenant requirements. Numbers provides instructions for the people and movement from covenant to conquest. Finally, Deuteronomy reiterates the covenant, but it does so in a greatly expanded form and in terms appropriate to a new generation, one about to enter a new life experience and to engage in a new realm of responsibility. I thought that was a pretty good reminder of where we've been. Over the last 7 years, we have studied 4 out of the 5 books mentioned here, in addition to several from the New Testament. And so now we are ready to begin to close the chapter in our study of the Pentateuch, the 5 books of Moses. So without any further comments on my part, we'll jump into our questions. And the first question is for Logan. It asks, what was the purpose of writing the book of Deuteronomy for ancient Israel, and what is its overall role in the law of Moses?
Just really quick, a couple facts about the book of Deuteronomy. It is the 5th of the Torah, 5th book of the Bible, and of course the author is Moses. In Greek, it is deuteros nomi, if I'm saying that correctly, and that translates over to second law. As for the purpose, it's similar to the book of Numbers in the sense that it reminds people or the Israelites of their covenant to God. And as for its overall role, it's going over the requirements for the Israelites in the promised land.
Very good. Just a little addition to Logan's mention about the name of the book. We've discussed in the other 4 books of the Law of Moses that the Hebrew Bible gives different names for most of them, if not all of them, now that I think about it, than we have in our English Bible. The Hebrews generally just took the first word of the book, and that was the name of the book. And so the first words here in the Hebrew version are Ele Debarim, which simply says, these are the words, and that's what the Hebrews called it. But we get the word Deuteronomy from the Septuagint, which is a compound word. Deutero means 2, and nomos is the Greek word for law. And so literally it's translated second law, is the same over in the Latin Vulgate. But really, second law is a little bit of a misnomer. The word comes from Deuteronomy chapter 17 and verse 18, and it shouldn't really be second law. Probably a better rendering of the Hebrew is repetition of the law or copy of the law. So we're not getting a new law. This is not an additional law that is to be tacked on side by side to Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers. Rather, it is a restatement of many of those laws, plus additional information being provided with them. And so the Hebrew title, as we see also in the very first verse, notes that this was given by Moses, and we'll talk about that here a little bit further down, but I wonder if anyone else has further comments about the first question here. Taylor?
One commentator I read said that purpose of Deuteronomy could be summed up in verse 5, this idea of Moses beginning to explain the law. Like you said, giving it into perhaps a new audience in some ways, but also expounding on it a bit. It's interesting also to consider the things that are included and not included. For instance, circumcision, one of the most fundamental aspects of the old law, I don't think is included at all in Deuteronomy. And other things aren't mentioned, things we think of as fundamental to the Mosaic law, Sabbath, are included very peripherally. So it's interesting the focus that Moses takes. Obviously, he knew what the people needed to hear.
Right.
So there's reason for that. But it is kind of interesting for us as spectators to wonder why some things are included and some things aren't. And then it's also unique that this entire book, except chapters 31 to 34, are words of Moses addressed to the people. It's unique in that it's multiple discourses, but it's a series of discourses by Moses, and then a little bit on at the end, summarizing the end of it.
Very good. Yeah. Lauren?
They say the purpose is to lead this new generation, Israel, into obedience and to warn against disobedience. And the verse they quote is pretty well known from Deuteronomy 11, 26 through 28, where it says, "Behold, I set before you today a blessing and a curse. A blessing if you obey the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you today, and a curse if you do not obey the commandments of the Lord your God. But turn aside from the way which I command you today to go after other gods which you have not known."
Which, to Taylor's point, was much more of a problem. Not only did Moses see the needs of the people at that moment, but remember, Moses was a prophet. And so he knew what stumbling blocks lied before the people when they entered Canaan. Circumcision, the Sabbath, those things that Taylor mentioned, those were never really issues for Israel as we look throughout their history. They kept those pretty faithfully. But dabbling with idolatry or adopting idolatrous practices in the worship of God, well, those were major stumbling blocks and issues for them for hundreds and hundreds of years. And so Moses spends more time emphasizing some of those themes. I read one very interesting, and this is not to do with the form of the book, which we'll get to in the next question, but one really interesting idea as far as a parallel to the book of Deuteronomy, and this came from the NIV application commentary, and it was talking about how much theology there is in the book of Deuteronomy, teachings about God and about covenant, which we'll talk more about also in just a little bit, as opposed to the previous four books, sort of likened it to the book of Romans of the Old Testament, that it had lots of high theology and teachings about the nature of God and the nature of our relationship with God, or Israel's relationship with God. But then another comparison it made was between Deuteronomy and the Gospel of John, because within Deuteronomy, you have a man, Moses, who now has decades of perspective on the things that have led the people to the point where they are now. And he's looking back on that time, reflecting on it, and learning from it. Well, tradition tells us that John wrote his gospel decades after Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and decades after Christ lived on the earth. And so John was doing the same. He was reflecting back on the life of Christ after having now these decades of experience and seeing how that life had unfolded before Christians across the world. And so it gives him a unique perspective. That's sort of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is a unique perspective on history that we've already studied in primarily Exodus, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy. I thought that was a good point as well. Bart, did you have a... thought I saw a hand.
Yeah. Somebody pointed out that the word love is used 22 times in this book, the book of Deuteronomy. It's not used a single time in Numbers, the book we just came through. And so the commentator I was reading on this said that in that sense, Deuteronomy is a theology of the heart. You're speaking about theology. And so Moses is... the purpose then is to call the people to love the Lord. And, of course, the Shema, chapter 6, verse 4 and 5, the Lord our God is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and all your strength. And so that's kind of how I see this, is Moses is, the purpose is to prick their hearts and get them, as they enter into the new land, to remember God and obey his will.
Yeah, I think that's excellent. Leviticus, we had the famous love your neighbor passage. But here the emphasis is on loving God. And the Hebrew word for love, I'm sure we'll discuss this in future studies, and sometimes translated love, sometimes translated mercy. There are a couple different Hebrew words, but many of those words carry with them the idea of covenant fulfillment or covenant obedience, that in order to love, or the way that you love God, is by following in his covenant. And as you said in Deuteronomy 6, a famous passage, nowhere else, this the Shema was highly cherished by the Jews in later years, in the days of Jesus. This was one of their favorite texts, which they rested on greatly. But it doesn't come to us at all before Deuteronomy. Interesting why Moses would have included that here and now. Anyone else on this first question? Let's go to question number two. Bill, this will be for you. And this question is about the style. How is Deuteronomy different in style when compared to the other books of the law? And are there any other books in the Bible that might be similar to it in the way that they're formatted or stylized?
Well, I kind of struggled with, from a style standpoint. I thought it was interesting. I mean, it's entirely Moses, and you know, he takes them through a history. He takes them. He reminds them of where they've been, and again, Bard or Taylor, somebody mentioned, you know, or maybe yourself, I'm not sure. You know, this is that second generation. This is that younger people. I kind of saw this as like Moses' last time. I'm going to tell you again where you've been, where you've come from, what we went through as a nation. And then he addresses them, you know, the initial address from the historical standpoint, and then the second address, laying out all the different elements of Israel's relationship with God and how they were to behave, and then that third address where he's again reminding them of the covenant. So it was to me that made it pretty unique. I can't really put it in words. I like the second question better. I thought that was really interesting, and I thought maybe Leviticus was the best comparison that I could think of, and Leviticus was about the priest, the role of the priest, and now we have Deuteronomy, and this is the role of the people. You know, this is Moses is telling the people what God expects of them. Leviticus, Moses was telling the priest what God expected, how they were to perform, and all the details. And now this is about the people.
Very good, Bart.
Yeah, I thought that I went to the New Testament in terms of what book is similar to it. And I thought of Paul. So Paul knew he was about to die. He, in 2 Timothy, is saying, there is a crown laid up for me. I've run the race, kept the faith, finished the fight. And then chapter 4, as he concludes most likely the last book that he wrote, he charges Timothy and all of us through this word to be instant, ready in season and out of season, convinced, rebuked, and so on. And so I thought it was similar in the sense that Moses knew he was going to die. By the way, it was 30, if the dating on this that some of the commentators I read are correct, they said he had 30 days. He was going to die in 30 days, and then they spent 30 days mourning, and then they entered the promised land. Maybe you have something on that, but he only has 30 days to live, and so like Paul, he's charging the people to be faithful to God, and Paul almost begs us to be faithful to God, and Moses really, in his discourses, is begging us to be faithful.
The last words of great preachers. Very good. Lauren?
I read a commentator that suggested it might have been the outline for the Sermon on the Mount. All of the moral laws that are brought forth in that sermon that are expounded on.
Very good. As we'll see probably in a few questions here, Jesus quoted from the book of Deuteronomy more than any other book of the Old Testament. So yes, that's a distinct possibility. Very good. The one parallel that I saw to a New Testament book, if we look at Deuteronomy as a series of sermons or a series of speeches, it's sort of like the book of Hebrews. A lot of scholars have pointed out that the book of Hebrews is not structured like any other book in the New Testament. It's structured more like a series of sermons that are just connected one to another, a very homiletic approach to what the issues were of the day. And that's what the book of Deuteronomy is, a series of speeches, some poetry mixed in as well, which is otherwise quite rare in the books of Moses, some extended poetry sections later on in some of the latter chapters. So very good, I enjoyed all of those answers. Anyone else on this question? Okay, question number three. Trace, this is for you. What is the overall message of Deuteronomy as it relates to the children of Israel and their impending conquest of Canaan, and also for future generations of Jews?
Well, my answer to this was, it's kind of already been given a little bit by Bart, but Moses was very concerned about the children of Israel. He He wanted them to be obedient to God, and he wanted, you know, he was warning them of false idols, and he was, you know, basically telling them to avoid any dealings with the Canaanites, and he was telling them that they'll be rewarded for their love, and you know, just lots of, you know, kind of attributes that they need to have, and ways to deal with the Canaanites, and getting them ready for the future. And unfortunately, they do pretty good with Joshua, but in the far future, they fail miserably. They have their dealings with the Canaanites that they didn't wipe out, and they also had their problems with the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Romans, so you name it.
Very good. Who else would like to add? Taylor, and then Bart?
Just a couple small things. There's a warning that's been said already, but repeated throughout against this cycle that Israel fell into in the past of apostasy and then punishment and then pardon. They would repent, they'd get pardoned from God, but then they do it all over again. They repeat the cycle. Did it several times with Moses, and unfortunately, like Trey said, this is something that continues, but Moses is trying to warn against that. If you've done it before, don't do it again. Don't fall into the different pitfalls that you have in the past. And I thought it's interesting, too, there are reminders of Egypt sprinkled almost evenly throughout the book, about 10 or so. Chapter 5, 15, 11, verse 10, 24, verse 18, several others. So there's not only this repetition of, you know, what not to do, don't fall into the sin, you know, do this, don't do that, but the consequence, remember the consequence, remember where you came from, so that you can use that to motivate you not to fall into those same pitfalls. And unfortunately, like Trey said, it didn't always work.
Very good. Bart?
One of the commentators I read broke this down into three parts. The overall message is renew the covenant. Remind, it, the word cutting, God has cut you a covenant, is actually, I forget which chapter it's in, but one of the translation I was reading spoke of God cutting the covenant with you. So the covenant is renewed in these expository sermons by Moses, or at least he is reminding them to renew it in their hearts. And then the conquest, reminding them of what they're to do as they go in. So that's the second part. And then in the far future, to live. And both gentlemen, Bard, really said that. But so there's three parts. Renew the covenant in your heart now. Make sure you the conquest is according to God's commands. And then in the future, your children shall live in the promised land and be faithful. I thought that was a good point. And then you say, what about future generations of Jews? In Josiah's time, King Josiah, who lives 800 years, or more like 600 years later, some of the priests are in the temple moving stuff around, and they find a book of the law with blessings and cursings. And most commentators think it was Deuteronomy. They probably had the four other books, and they had lost Deuteronomy. And they literally find Deuteronomy. And Josiah, the king, reads this book, which Moses had said kings are to write this book down. The king was supposed to make a copy of the book of Deuteronomy himself to write it down, and he hadn't been doing that, obviously. And so there's a great mourning, and Josiah restores the covenant, the Passover. We've heard sermons on that. And so Deuteronomy applies 600 years later, just as it applied in Moses.
Very good. I'd like to read a couple of quotations here. This first one is from the NIV Application Commentary, where it highlights some of the teachings of the book of Deuteronomy. The function of the book of Deuteronomy is to call every generation of Israelites to faithful covenant love for God in response to his gracious salvation and his revelation of himself, and an acceptance of the missional role to which he has called them. In developing this theme, Moses presents a theology that is remarkable both for its profundity and its scope. So he gives six, of course he expands on these in his commentary, six highlights of the teachings of Deuteronomy. Israel's history begins and ends with God. Deuteronomy offers a comprehensive picture of the community of faith, the chosen people of God. No other book in the Old Testament presents as thorough a treatment of covenant relationship as Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy presents a highly developed theology of land, connecting God's blessings with the land. And the book of Deuteronomy presents a remarkable approach to administration of the covenant community. You mentioned kings are dealt with in the book of Deuteronomy. So are judicial officers, priests, and prophets. A famous passage Moses gives on the qualification of prophet, or how you test whether or not a prophet is truly from God. And then here's another list that's a little bit different, though has some similarities from Gary Hall's commentary. He gives the list of the God of Israel is the only God and Lord of the covenant. The idea of rejecting false religion and rejecting idolatry. God binds himself to his people by the covenant. The covenant requires obedience from Israel. God is the Lord of history. Human history is the arena in which God chose to work out his will. It's through these people and what they're about to do that God's will is enacted on the earth. The relationship between God and Israel could be described as one of love, emphasized more in Deuteronomy than any other book prior, as Bart mentioned, and of course the land. The land is an important focus in Deuteronomy. We've talked about why that is, why this land was special for God in fulfilling his plan on the earth. That it was in this land a nation would be born, a nation would serve him as a testimony to all the world of true and righteous religion. And more importantly, it was on this land and through these people that God would bring his Savior into the world. And so all of this, God was able to tie together. Moses was able to tie all these themes together in the book of Deuteronomy, making it very unique, profound, important, impactful in the lives of these new leaders, younger generation, as they're about to go in to Canaan. Anyone else? Bill.
Back to that previous slide. Please. That first sentence, the function of the book of Deuteronomy is to call every generation of Israelites to faithful covenant love for God. I went through this whole study just thinking about that new generation. This is until the new covenant comes. This is for every generation. I didn't get that. I wasn't realizing that during the study.
Yes, certainly. Moses writes and gives these speeches in the historical context that we find them. But Moses is a prophet, and Moses knows that this message would be absolutely necessary for every generation to come if they ever want to please God. And they did well with Joshua, as has been mentioned. The end of the book of Joshua says that the people served God all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua. High praise for this generation about to go in and conquer the land. But it does not seem to have lasted for very long, perhaps because they lost the book for a long time, perhaps because the kings weren't following the decree to copy this book and to put it into their heart and put it in the practice of the people. We better move on to question number 4. Lance, this question is for you. Question is, how is Deuteronomy utilized in the New Testament, and why is it a book Christians should study?
The point you just made is a great way to kind of segue into this, just because it rings true for all generations. But the New Testament books that contain quotations from Deuteronomy are found in Matthew, Mark, Luke, Acts, John, Romans, Galatians 1 and 2, First and Second Corinthians, Hebrews, and the pastoral epistles and Revelation. I'm going to pick the 6 times that Jesus quoted Deuteronomy, and I'm going to reflect those back to Deuteronomy. We see those in Mark 12, 29 and 30, Matthew 22, 37, Luke 10, verse 27, where he reflects back to Deuteronomy 6, 4, verse 6, 4 through 6. And that is used for examples of loving the Lord with all of your heart, your soul, and your mind, as Bart was talking about earlier. Matthew 4, 4, Luke 4, 4, that reflects back to Deuteronomy 8, verse 3, teaching on not living by bread alone, but by the word of God. Matthew 4, 6. And Luke 4, verse 12, reflect back to Deuteronomy 6, verse 16, speaking about not tempting the Lord your God. Matthew 4, 10, Luke 4, 8, reflects back to Deuteronomy 6, 13, speaking about fearing the Lord. Matthew 5, verse 31, reflects back to Deuteronomy 24, 1, speaking on divorce. Matthew 18, verse 16, reflects back to Deuteronomy 19, 15, speaking about the laws concerning witnesses to crimes. All of these New Testament scriptures, which refer back to the Old Testament, are important because the same teaching Jesus was referring back to back in the first century still apply to us as Christians today.
Good. Warren Wiersbe said that Deuteronomy is quoted in the New Testament nearly 100 times. and that Jesus quoted more from Deuteronomy than any other Old Testament book. I didn't realize it was that many. 100 quotations, maybe those include just allusions or other kinds of citations, but 100 times, that's pretty remarkable. Who else would like to comment on this? Taylor?
Lance mentioned each of the times Jesus quoted Deuteronomy when being tempted. And I think that's something amazing to think about, that Jesus quotes Deuteronomy 3 times for 3 successive temptations in Matthew 4, verses 4 to 10. I was thinking about it in sort of academic terms. A researcher, you publish a paper, you cite a lot of authors when you do your research. And if it's good research, you publish it and other people cite it. And it's sort of an honor. And then if you write a really good research paper, I would know. But if you do, a really prestigious research group would cite it. And that's sort of an honor. That's a really good thing to put on a resume to have that. But just to imagine that Moses wrote this, right, we get into the authorship later, but the endorsement that Jesus Christ cites your paper 3 times, and not just 3 random times, 3 times in a row, and then 3 times in one of the most trying periods of his life, that was what he turned to. It's an amazing endorsement for the author of the book of Deuteronomy. And the fact also that those passages at least are still applicable to us today. It's a very powerful ringing endorsement from Jesus. And then one other, I thought, an aspect of Deuteronomy passage that's quoted in the New Testament is Deuteronomy 18:15, when Moses foretells of a lawgiver who will be like him coming to Israel. And in Acts 3, verses 22 and 23, and other places, we see as Christians, as us today, that that refers to Jesus. And so when we talk about the prophetic aspect of that book, and certainly that was borne out in this prophecy of Christ.
Very good. Bart?
I appreciate that, and I wanted to point out the relationship of Deuteronomy and the book of Revelation. Moses stands at the beginning of the Mosaic Age, and he tells the history of the Jews, their captivity, and then at the end of 1,500 years, a prophet's coming. That's Jesus. And so their entire history is told, and he says in Deuteronomy 4, verse 2, don't add or subtract right to this. John, the Revelator, stands at the beginning of the New Testament Age and gives us a picture of the apocalypse, the entire New Testament age to the second coming of Christ. And the very last words of the book, or near the end, in Revelation 22, are those words in Deuteronomy, do not add or subtract. And so there's a definite parallel between Moses, the deliverer, and John the Revelator.
Very good. Warren Wiersbe, in his commentary, made this comment about whether or not Christians should study the book of Deuteronomy. And when I read this from an evangelical, I thought, well, that kind of sounds like some of our preachers. This is what he said. The church today needs to return to the principles of godly living explained in Deuteronomy. Only then can we move forward in victory by faith in Christ and claim the inheritance he has appointed for us. To love God supremely and our neighbors as ourselves, and to seek to glorify God in all we do, is the essence of the message of Deuteronomy, and its message we need to return to as we face the challenges of the future. I thought it was pretty good. Pretty good. Certainly much that we will be able to learn from this great old book. Lance?
I said first century. I meant around the 7th century. I don't know if anybody caught that
or not. Okay.
Anyway.
Anyone else? Question number 5. Grant, this one's going to be for you. Question is, what are some of the controversies surrounding Deuteronomy, and what criticisms are made against its authorship in particular?
Coffin points out, I guess, that during this
of Moses, then he kind of gets part of that argument as well, and says, no, there's no way that was the case. And then going back to the commentaries, there's several consistencies with the tone as far as it being a retrospective letter or book that was written as far as the perspective of Moses looking back in the history of Israel, as well as looking at the prophecy towards the future. There's several times that Deuteronomy is quoted in the Old Testament as well, not just in the New Testament. There's several passages that are parallel between Isaiah and Deuteronomy, along with Amos, Hosea, Jeremiah. So there's lots of concrete references to it that show that it's a very well established book at the time.
Very good. Yeah, the we might call it the traditional view, the view among Christian and Jewish scholars that lasted for the first 1800 years of Christianity up until the early 19th century was, of course, that Moses was not only the writer of the book of Deuteronomy, but all of the Pentateuch, with the exception perhaps of the last section where his death is recorded. Presumably Joshua would have added that in at the end of the book. Oh, I already have this here. Okay, this was up the whole time. So the reason that Christian and Jewish scholars believed that was because of all of this evidence. Throughout the book of Deuteronomy, it says that Moses is the one speaking, or that he's the one writing. All of these Old Testament books attribute the books of the law, the five books, to Moses. And all of these New Testament references, including references from Jesus himself, attribute Moses as the author, not just of Deuteronomy, but of the books of the law in general, all five of them. This didn't change among scholars until about the early 19th century, when a man by W.M.L. DeWitt, who was a German scholar, wrote a book where he began to pick this apart. And he essentially believed that, as Grant mentioned, Deuteronomy was written hundreds of years later and then attributed to Moses, and that much of the Old Testament was written years after it claims to have been written, as Jewish scholars and scribes went back and edited that material to make it fit better with whatever was going on in their particular historical time period. Especially this is alleged of books like the book of Daniel, which is said to have been written much later than the Old Testament attributes the book of Daniel to be written, during the time of the Maccabees, a time that was emphasizing a lot of nationalism. And so different books of the Old Testament have been attributed to later time periods, and most of this started with the book of Deuteronomy. So if this is something you, and perhaps others have some comments on this, but if this is something that you really would like to study more, I would consider that you read, or recommend that you read, a book by J.W. McGarvey that deals exclusively with this subject. The book is called The Authorship of the Book of Moses with Its Bearings on the Higher Criticism of the Pentateuch. This whole movement was eventually labeled Higher Criticism, and it was a scholarly movement among people in the university setting who started to pick apart the Old Testament and started to challenge the traditional authors that have been generally ascribed to those books. It's interesting to study about it. It's interesting to read about it, how all of this has progressed over the last 200 years or so. But I don't know that it's something that we need to spend a lot of time in this context on, though I do think it's important to address it, because several of the commentaries in my library, which I've been utilizing to study for the book of Deuteronomy so far, all take this position. And they sort of state it as, this is what everybody believes now. Nobody believes the old way anymore. We all just believe this is what it is. Moses didn't actually write it, and that's not really important. We can still study it for its value, considering the context in which it was actually written. But this is not at all true, and it comes from a viewpoint of the scriptures, which of course undermine the entire concept of inspiration, and want to remove anything supernatural about the Bible. And those who are bent in that direction, those who are predisposed to believe that way, then take that ideology and they place it over top their study of the Word of God. And that, of course, is very dangerous. Whenever you come to the Bible with any kind of preconception, it's pretty dangerous. Would anyone else like to add to this, a comment, perhaps? Taylor?
One thing to go off of what you just said, in Romans chapter 10, verses 5 to 8, Paul quotes from, well, he says these are the words of Moses, and then quotes from Deuteronomy 3 or 4 times. And so there's your New Testament endorsement, at least, as to the authorship. If you believe Paul, Paul says Moses wrote the book.
Very good. Okay, let's move on to our last question. And we want to sort of give a broad overview, an outline, a breakdown of the book of Deuteronomy as best we can. And so this will go to Taylor.
So the most broad way perhaps to break it down is into three sermons. This has been touched on a little already, but three speeches given by Moses to Israel on the plains of Moab. And so yes, before entering Canaan, and then the timeline, I read 40 days, I think parts of 30. I'm not sure, but the first sermon recounting the 40 years of wandering in the wilderness and ending with an exhortation to follow the law, which of course is repeated throughout the book. The second, reminding Israel of their need, rather, for God and for his laws, a reminder to follow him and trust in him and not follow after idols, fall into idol worship and worshiping the native gods of the land. And then the third sermon being this promise of restoration with repentance. If you do stray, if the grace of God will allow you to return to that covenant relationship that you have. Another breakdown I saw very quickly, chapters 1 to 4, wilderness journey, Sinai to Moab, 4 to 11, giving of the Ten Commandments is relived, obedience, of course, is urged, 12 to 26, laws of worship, religion, social leaders, and society at large, 27 to 28, the blessings and the cursings, 29 to 30, a further exhortation to the people, and then 31 to 34, sort of the wrapping up the loose ends, Joshua appointed the successor, laws to the Levites, Moses then ascending Mount Nebo, and then finally dying, and then a couple poems of Moses are included as well.
Very good, yeah. The three speeches, which this is from the College Press NIV commentary, gave these titles to the speeches: remembering the grace of God, explaining the grace of God, trusting in the grace of God. That's certainly the easiest way of those three speeches to give a breakdown of the book. Did someone else have another overview they'd like to provide? I also have this one that I found that I liked as well. This gives the book sort of a chiastic sort of approach with the covenant stipulations as the central core. And you can see from reaching chapters 12 to 26, the most meat of the book. And so it has two outer frames. First, a look backward, and then a look forward at the end, and two inner frames, the great peroration, the speech to excite people, and then this covenant ceremony here, the blessings and the cursings, and both of those sort of surrounding all of the stipulations of the covenant with its emphasis on love and obedience. Love and obedience, that is emphasized over and over and over, especially in this central section, this core of the book. Remember that when we studied the book of Leviticus, we found that there was a core of that book, the 16th chapter, almost right exactly in the middle, and that was the stipulations and regulations for the Day of Atonement, which Brother Smith Bibbins preached about at our study here this last March. That was the core of the book, the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, the core of the book to the Levites. And here we have a core as well. It's much bigger than one chapter if you use this outline. But as Bill said, this is the covenant emphasized to the people. You have a responsibility to God. Every single one of you has a responsibility to God, and that is emphasized heavily in this middle section.